You're listening to Living Lab Radio. I'm Heather Goldstone. We've all heard of conspicuous consumption. Big fancy houses, big fancy cars, designer clothes, and luxurious vacations. That kind of lifestyle comes with a big price tag and a big carbon footprint. But here's the thing. We are all consumers, and the things we buy and do can rack up quite a carbon footprint even if they're not conspicuous. Everyday choices, like the food we buy and the clothes we wear, have environmental impacts that we often underestimate or ignore altogether. Tatiana Schlossberg shines a light on those issues in her new book, Inconspicuous Consumption. She's a former science writer for the New York Times, and she joins me now. Tatiana, good to talk with you.
Hi, it's so great to be here. Thank you.
Can you just give us your definition of inconspicuous consumption?
Sure. So in the way that I write about it in the book, you know, it's the hidden and unconscious environmental impacts of all of our stuff. The consumption that we do all the time that we don't think about, things we take for granted or think of as necessities, but, you know, they're all kind of connected to global climate change or environmental pollution and degradation in ways that we don't think about and in ways that kind of connect us all through the different impacts that they have.
We tend to think about or hear about things like the cars that we drive, the electricity that we use, those kind of big ticket carbon footprint items.
Yeah.
How does all of the other consumption, the inconspicuous consumption, compare to those parts of our carbon footprint?
So those things are definitely big and important parts of, you know, our carbon footprint as individuals and as society. But as you say, you know, those are the things that maybe we know about. One of the chapters in my book is about the internet and technology, talking about how much electricity it takes to use the internet. And, you know, for each one of us, it might be small, but we use the internet so much and so much more than we used to and for lots of different things. And that adds up. And I also think it's really easy to overlook because it's invisible to each one of us because we don't have a server farm in our house. So
not all of us anyway.
Right. And, you know, and then I wrote about fashion and denim. You know, producing cotton for denim uses a tremendous amount of water, but also, you know, all the different baths to dye the denim uses a lot. And, you know, what happens? We're buying clothes that we think of as disposable, and so we throw them away, and that produces landfill emissions. Or when we put our clothing in the washing machine, if it's synthetic fibers, that might result in microplastic pollution from the, you know, little pieces of polyester that break off and are too small to be trapped by our washing machine. So we would never think about them, and it's not necessarily like the fault of the individual or the consumer for not thinking about them, because it's not obvious and we're not told about it, and it's really hard to find this stuff out. And so that's why I wanted to write this book, because I was curious and I felt like other people might have these questions. And once I started digging into it, it was, well, of course we have these questions because this information really isn't available to the average person.
Well, let's walk through a few of those, because in the book, Inconspicuous Consumption, there are three or four big sections. And as you mentioned, food is one of those, fashion is one of those. And to the point you were just making about how hard it can be to figure this out, you say the fashion industry is particularly bad when it comes to transparency and providing information to consumers and even to journalists like yourself trying to figure out what's going on. What makes the fashion industry so different?
I have some pet theories, but, you know, I think one of them is that it's not something that historically has been seen as especially serious. So, you know, it hasn't necessarily been subject to the same kind of scientific inquiry as some of these other areas. And it also happens, manufacturing and production happens in places without good environmental standards, like Bangladesh or Vietnam and China. That's very removed from us. But, you know, it's also an industry that touches so many other industries. It's, you know, it's agriculture and livestock and petrochemicals and manufacturing and advertising. And, you know, so it's sort of touches so many different things. And so it's hard to kind of pull out the discrete elements. And so for fashion in particular, I had to sort of pick a few things that I wanted to write about and, you know, in order to kind of convey what's going on in the industry and the magnitude of it, as opposed to kind of top to bottom, here's how it all works.
I know that your point in writing this book was not necessarily to give people an easy, you know, do this or do that answer. But one thing with regard to clothing and environmental impact. A question that I've had many times and have found it hard to answer is, if you were to weigh the environmental impact of natural fiber clothing, something like denim, something based from cotton where you have, you know, land use and water and fertilizer mm-hmm. being used to create the cotton, versus synthetic clothes where it might be petroleum based and you're essentially creating a plastic product. Mm-hmm. In all of your investigation, how do those end up balancing out in terms of environmental footprint? Is it possible to do that kind of comparison?
I try to resist the temptation to say one thing is better than the other, because, as you say, they are so different in their kind of different impacts. And they are actually pretty linked together. Like, unless you're buying something that's 100% cotton, it will probably be like a cotton poly blend. So, you know, it's all kind of intertwined. I think, you know, there are some fibers that are more sustainable just because of, you know, the nature of them, which are like linen and flax and hemp, but those are sort of very small sectors of the market and harder to come by. But yes, as you're saying, I don't want to say here's what to do, here's what not to do, and that this is a problem that can be fixed by individuals. But at the same time, to really think about, what do you need? Like, do we really all need to have everything we want all the time? And maybe to think about, you know, keeping our clothes for longer, or trying to fix them, or, you know, not buying something just because we can.
Tatiana Schlossberg, another section of Inconspicuous Consumption, your book, is dedicated to food. And there, it's maybe not, you know, just saying reduce is maybe not
right.
The solution. We all have to eat,
right.
But there are decisions that we make about what we buy.
Yes.
And we might, you know, if we're thinking, okay, carbon footprint, maybe we're thinking about how far away something came from. But you actually raise an interesting question about organic food.
Yes.
And how, you literally posed the question, how good is organic? What did you find out about organic food that would cause you to pose that question?
There are a couple of things. You know, one of them is, what do we actually mean by organic? And I think in our ideal imagination, it's like a small family farm. And that's not really always what it is. The way that I got interested in it was that I had found this apple orchard in Connecticut. It's called Rogers Orchards, and they're the best apples that I've ever had. And I really love apples, so this is a particularly high standard. And so they wrote to me, and they said that after I ordered some apples online, you know, referring to my own carbon footprint is not exactly pristine, but, you know, saying that they were not organic, but they were committed to sustainability and sort of, you know, the highest levels of environmental integrity. And so I was really curious, you know, well, here are some people who care about the environment and who it really matters for their product, you know, how things are grown and how they take care of the land and the soil. And so why wouldn't they be organic? And, you know, what I found out from them was that in New England, it's really hard to grow an apple using only organic practices because of the mildew and the pest pressure. But as I looked into it more, I also found that to feed the whole world organically, we would have to clear a lot of land that's forested or, you know, other kind of natural ecosystems, because you don't get as much yield per acre.
Well, Tatiana Schlossberg, as you've already alluded to, a lot of the things that we buy and use and consume at this point come from far away. And you mm-hmm. also spend a good chunk of your book, Inconspicuous Consumption, on the carbon footprint and the environmental impact more broadly of shipping. And you use this
yeah.
one example that stood out to me. I mean, it afforded you the opportunity to play with some puns, which was fun. but you use the example of something as small and simple as a red rose given as a Valentine gift, and the hidden footprint, largely of the shipping, but of just that one simple item. Give us that story.
So the red rose, that's air cargo just because it's so perishable. But because of, you know, various trade agreements, most of the roses and lots of the other flowers that we sell and buy in the U.S. come from South America and Colombia in particular. And so when you're buying a rose, you know, if it's at a corner store or Walmart, which I think is, you know, one of the largest sellers of flowers in the country, you may not think about where it comes from, or you assume that it's not from not that far away or a greenhouse or something, but it's most likely coming from Colombia. And so you know, we're not thinking about the backstories of all the things that we buy and where they come from. And a flower might seem like, yeah, it doesn't take a ton of gasoline to move a flower, but sort of the cumulative impact of, you know, how we've decided to structure our economy and the way that we buy things around the ease of moving goods. And that's especially true of shipping, as you mentioned, which is, you know, we hear arguments like, well, it's cheaper to manufacture something in China and ship it to the U.S. And it's cheaper because nobody's paying for the pollution.
Right. And by the time I encountered your story of the single red rose, fairly late mm-hmm. in the book, it was no longer just about right. the rose. I'm thinking, oh, you know, the rose was wrapped in a piece of plastic and it was shipped from somewhere and it was kept cold. And it really drives home the point that these things that we take for granted as, you know, as the title of your book says, inconspicuous consumption, not something extravagant right. and luxurious, but just simple and tiny and everyday, when you actually mm-hmm. break it down, is none of right. those things. And at that point, it starts to seem very overwhelming. If there is nothing that is simple yeah. and easy, I mean, how do you handle this knowledge and understanding that none of this is simple and easy and cost-free, that it all comes with a price tag that's not just economic, it's also an environmental footprint?
Right. I think I was so interested to learn about all of this, as you're saying, these kind of different impacts and these different backstories of all of these things that we take for granted or just assume to be sort of ordinary. And that was one of the things I wanted to communicate in this book, was that, you know, all of these problems, they seem scary and alarming, and they are, but it's also really interesting, and kind of understanding how all these systems work will hopefully make some people feel like they want to do something to change that, or to question these systems in the first place. I think about these things like, you know, trying to use less plastic, or, you know, not eating meat, or if I have to fly, offsetting my flight and things like that. And that's more because I feel like I want to live in line with my values more than I think that individual action solves this problem. And that's not to say that individual action isn't important, but these problems are so big and complicated and connect people all over the world that, you know, we need kind of bigger systemic changes from governments and corporations. And that's something that I've tried to get across in the book.
Tatiana Schlossberg's new book is Inconspicuous Consumption. She'll be talking about it at the Martha's Vineyard Book Festival, and the book will be out in late August. Tatiana, thanks so much.
Thank you so much for having me.